What's up, everybody? Welcome to this episode of Unemployable, focusing specifically on Bitcoin. And this morning, we are joined by somebody who's quite well known in the Bitcoin community globally. His name is Tony Yazbek. He runs a company called The Bitcoin Way, and he has an extraordinary story. So, Tony, welcome to the pod. How are you doing?
Thank you, Adam. Thank you for having me, man. I'm happy to be here. I'm doing great, man. Doing great.
And you were just saying, you are just up the road from me. I'm in Cyprus in Limassol this morning. You're in, I can never say.
Yeah, in Nicosia. I come here for a few days, you know, just to meet some people, do some work, and, you know, spread the Bitcoin message as far and wide as humanly possible.
Yeah. So in the Bitcoin community, in the Bitcoin world, we have a saying that Bitcoin is on a need-to-know basis. In your case, that takes on very special meaning. And I think to set this podcast up, it would be terrific for the listeners to have a context of why you were kind of forced to Bitcoin. What was your story? Because so many people, a lot of our audience is in Australia or New Zealand, and they live in this bubble where everything is a certain way. They don't realize there are millions or hundreds of millions of people around the world that don't have the circumstances that we are blessed to enjoy, or the stability that we enjoy in Australia. So maybe you could just kick off by telling us your incredible story, and then we'll go from there.
Sure, man. I mean, I've been in the tech world my entire life. I've ran about three successful businesses since the day I started, you know, generating some sort of income, and all the way up to the age of about my early 40s, around 41, 42. You know, I made the tragic mistake of deciding to retire, or so I thought, right? And so I was in Lebanon, you know, at that time, and, you know, sort of trying to enjoy life, which is something that's very hard for me to do, because if I'm not like working, I'm the type of individual that literally goes crazy. Like, I can't sit here and do nothing. I have to be, you know, doing something useful. But a lot of people, you know, advise me, you know, like, why don't you take a break? You know, it's healthier, enjoy life. I mean, you've been doing all this great work for such a long time. Why don't you just enjoy it for a little while? And after some convincing, I decided to do it. And it was fine for a little while until that drastic day in October 2019, when I literally went to bed and woke up the next morning with a homeless sign on my forehead. Why? Because the banks had decided to seize every single account across the country. And so whatever you had in that bank was literally gone. So I woke up with about $70 to my name. You know, when you first hear this, you think it's some sort of like, you know, haha, very funny. But when you realize that it's not a joke, that chilling feeling that goes down your spine, I can promise you, you have never experienced anything like this ever in your entire existence. It is not something you can prepare for. And how you feel in the moment is complete nothing. You know, I was completely frozen. I didn't know what to think. I was just like, I remember I was shaking, because, you know, it was so surreal. And all of a sudden, everything around me became such a monumental problem. You know, like, where's lunch going to come from? You know, and especially if you've got folks that depend on you, like, what do you tell them? You know, when lunch comes around, I'm hungry. Okay. Understand? And so you try to find answers as quickly as possible. But no matter where you turn, nobody answers you. Nobody talks to you. Everything is shut in your face. And the problem is, everybody else is in the same predicament as you are. So it's not like you can call your neighbor, your friend, or someone that you know to help you out. They're all screwed. They all woke up to that news and are also like trying to decide if this is actually happening or just like a momentary thing. But no, it was a fact. All bank accounts across the country completely shut down. And if you had a US dollar account, it was illegally converted to the garbage local currency, the Lebanese pound, which was hyperinflated to numbers you've never seen before. So Lebanon and Zimbabwe are cousins now, right? So if you had, let's say, I don't know, let's say $1 million in US dollars in a Lebanese bank account, you had the purchasing power of like $50. That is the fiat system at its best. This is like its true colors, you know, shining. And that's how eventually, after many months of darkness and depression and contemplating life, you know, to be honest with you, whether it was worth it or not, I found my way into Bitcoin because I had a decision to make after almost a year. Do I exit and let them win? Or do I do something and try to turn my life around? And it really came down to what legacy did I want to leave behind? Those that know me and depend on me, like, what's the message did I want to leave for them if I chose the easy way out? Which, believe me, is a very, very powerful force that plays in your head when you have literally no options and nowhere to turn. And so I decided, you know what, whatever it takes, I'm going to find answers to this problem, and I'm going to find a way to end it once and for all. And that's how eventually I found my way to an Andreas Antopoulos video, which started this entire investigation, this entire dive into the Bitcoin rabbit hole. And, you know, fast forward all of this time, here we are. So that's like the TLDR summary of that story.
So I want to jump into how you found Bitcoin and like what you literally did like to turn things around. But I'm actually just curious personally, like, what do you do? Like, did you have kids at the time and a wife and things like that? What do you literally do when you have a currency theft in your case, or a currency collapse, which might happen slightly slower? Like for you, it literally happened overnight. Many times when countries go into hyperinflation, it happens over a few months, because Australians, for example, a lot of our audience have no concept of what countries go through in, you know, when these things happen. But what did you literally do? Like when you got $70 in the bank, what do you guys just walk out of your house and go to your neighbors and say, what are we going to do? And you start building community. Like what actually happens when an entire city is basically wiped out like that? Like how do you get your lunch? What actually happened?
It's desperation at its finest. You are reduced to your instinctive behavior. So what did we do? We did anything we can. Anything. And I mean literally anything. You had the country was sort of like catapulted back into the Stone Age, back into the days of barter. So if you were a barber, you were giving out free haircuts for somebody who had, I don't know, a garden to give you like some cucumbers and tomatoes. I had my skill set. So I was doing all sorts of things, helping people, which still needed tech services somehow. But I was doing them for practically nothing. But it's not like I had a choice, right? I had my immediate needs were just basic survival. It's not like I was looking to make a profit or looking to, you know, rise up, you know, career-wise in a situation like this. Because first of all, you're dealing with insanity. Nobody's in their right frame of mind. And so the only way they can pay you, most of them, is through something that, an asset that they possess, whether it's a physical good, you know, like a garden or, you know, something of that sort, or a service. And let me tell you, there's a lot of that like there's a lot of people that did things they did not want to do. Ego, you have to make it disappear. Nothing is impossible in a situation like this. I know people that had to resort to things that they really did not want to do, but that's the only thing they had at their disposal to somehow feed themselves, to live, to survive, to make it to the next hour. Because you're literally living minute by minute sometimes.
And was that, I was just going to say, was there looting and crime, or were people, there's a lot of that
of
as well.
Course. This is the first thing that rises. You know, you have gangs that form, and that put their weight down in certain areas, trying to mafia their way around this, which causes even more problems because their skill set is stealing and looting and killing and doing all of that stuff in order to ride their claim to fame, right? So those that can defend themselves, we're all right, but most people can't do this, unfortunately. So in a situation of pure chaos and turmoil, it really is survival of the fittest. Like if you can't fight, literally fight, you're finished. If you happen to be at the wrong place at the wrong time. And I've seen things from folks that I've grown up with that I never thought, I still can't forget them because,
So I don't want to go too far down that rabbit hole because I think it's pretty dark, but it does really speak to the role that money plays in our lives, that we sort of operate under a huge assumption that everything's going to be okay. And then for millions of people, one day it's not. And we're seeing in the West, we're getting further and further away from viability, shall we say. But basically, it sounds like you went forcibly to a peer-to-peer network of trade. Like instantly, all the intermediaries were disappeared and obviously not trusted. And for the listeners, we talk about this a lot in the Bitcoin community of this need-to-know basis, and people come into times in their life where they need to know. In Tony's case, it was the world collapsed around his ears, literally. So now you need to know about how money actually works. And Australians and Americans are often the slowest or the last to learn because they're the wealthiest countries with the most stable environments. So their need to know is the lowest. And that's why there's so much cynicism and skepticism in these developed markets. So, Tony, tell us about discovering Bitcoin. You discovered Antonopoulos's discussions. For those who don't know who Antonopoulos is, he's one of the very first Bitcoin evangelists and one of the most respected people in the space. So tell us about your journey from complete despair into Bitcoin and how Bitcoin ultimately saved, I guess, you and others, and why you do what you do today.
Well, when everything, fell apart, I was desperate for answers. I needed to understand how something like this could happen to someone like me, of all people, right? And so, as I dove deep down that rabbit hole, I very quickly realized that I didn't understand money. Most of the world, 99% of the general population, has no idea what money is. All they know is that you go to work, you get this thing, you put it in the bank, and that's how you live. That's not money. Okay, that's the painful lesson that I had to figure out and learn on my own. The money in your bank, first of all, is not money. It's worthless toilet paper concocted by a bunch of thieves. That's all they are. It's a thief. It's a bunch of thieves. It's a club that has access to a money printer and that somehow over the decades have managed to dupe the world into thinking this garbage has value and should be used, for living. And so that's what we've been doing, me included. Like I'm not exempting myself from being one of these dummies. But until life exploded in my face, that's when I realized that this was true. It wasn't just some guy blabbing on YouTube, right? So most people still haven't learned that lesson. And for the reasons that you mentioned, is because for them, you wake up, your cards still work, your PayPal, your Venmo, your whatever it is, it still functions. But what they are realizing now is that, oh my gosh, things are so expensive, I can't afford anything. Well, that should ring alarm bells, right? Like in any rational human being, you should ask yourself, like, why are things more expensive? Is it because the merchant just decided, they want to price eggs at $18 versus, two? No, that's not why. It's because his cost to bring that egg to the shelf has gone up exponentially. And what is the cause of all of this inflation? It's that excessive money printing, again, by that same group of parasitical thieves that have the right, that believe they have the right to live for free at the expense of 8 billion people. You have to work like a donkey, essentially, from 9 to 5 for money that isn't money to put it in a bank that actually takes the money from you, because the money in your bank is not yours. That's another lesson you have to learn. They can shut it down any second they want. This is what happened. So you work for money that's not money. You put it in an institution that steals it away from you and believes they own it, right? And on top of it, depending where you live, they tax you on it. So not only is it not money, they tax you on it, which takes away a large percentage of it. And then they go ahead and they continue printing that garbage to infinity, which further reduces your purchasing power. So if you're making $1,000 per month, right, whatever taxes you pay, 30%, 40%, maybe more, let's say you're down to $600, $700. That's the number that you see on the screen. Now they nuke you with inflation, you know, which is more than double digits, depending where you live. So you're looking at a screen that says $600 or $700, but the purchasing power of that $600 and $700 is actually maybe $300, right? So that $1,000 that you just made per month is actually worth $300. And that number is decreasing every single day. Why? Because governments and central banks will continue to print money to fund whatever bullshit that they wanna pay for. All of these wars that you see, how are they funded? Infinite money printing. If you can hit a button and print $1 billion or $1 trillion, of course you can do whatever you want. You're literally living for free. You and I can't do this. Most people can't do this. So, but you're like the economic casualty of this fraud. And this is what most people still don't comprehend. The instinctive reaction of individuals is, I need to go work more. That's a useless waste of effort because you are swimming against a rigged system. When you go to the casino, how many people win? Less than 1%, right? It's a rigged system. No matter how smart you think you are, staying there long enough, you're going to lose everything. That is the fiat system. But most people, because of lack of knowledge, education, and fear, I need to get another job. I need to get a second, third, fourth job. And despite all of this, they still can't make ends meet, right?
Yeah, and this is the part that I think people, it's like in The Matrix where he says, there's a splinter in your mind and you know there's something wrong, but you can't quite put your finger on it. And what right. Tony's talking about here is the thing, because finally Australians and the West are starting to now really feel the insidious, cancerous nature of what you're talking about. I just read the Bitcoin, the Tao of Bitcoin, and in that book there was a line where he said, the result of inflation in our lives is that we've turned our homes into our hotels, we've turned our homes into hotels, we've turned our cars into taxis, and we've turned our bodies into porn. And that's a really poignant statement about the decay and the quality of life. Like you were saying, Tony, you know, like people are having to work harder, longer, take a second job, all trying to work harder to earn this funny money. It means less time with kids. It means less kids overall. It means smaller families. It means falling global populations. It means kids that have less one-on-one attentive time with their parents because they're distracted trying to earn enough to pay the bills. That's how insidious. And so when people see Bitcoiners, they're often saying they're crazy evangelists or they're almost religious in their fervor for it. It's because this stuff really matters in people's lives. It's very, very powerful. So you discover this. Maybe you could explain how Bitcoin fixes this for people. And why it provides, I hear Jack Mullers, he says it so perfectly, that money is an extracted form of time and energy. Maybe you could talk about how Bitcoin fixes this problem in as plain English as you can for the average person who still doesn't understand Bitcoin and thinks it's just internet funny money, and how it's different and why it's different to this ability to have no proof of work, just print a button, you know, and make it happen. Why is Bitcoin a solution?
When I first ran across Bitcoin, I had the same thoughts that probably most people to this day still have. It's too good to be true. Ah, this can't be. The government's going to shut it down, or something's going to go wrong. It's going to go down to zero. It's going to blow up. It's not worth it. It's too risky. All of that. I had all of these thoughts. But I come from the world of tech and cybersecurity. So I wanted to make sure that I wasn't just, building myself up for another explosive disappointment when I came across Bitcoin. And that's when I started to study it. And I read the white paper many times because the first time I didn't really understand it. I had to read it, several times over, watched a lot of videos, asked a lot of questions. And then it just clicked. Bitcoin, it's so surreal because we've never had anything like this before in the history of Earth, right? That's why it's really difficult for folks to wrap their brains around it, me included, at least initially. But this wasn't something that just landed from Mars overnight. This was something that was in the works for a very long time and likely failed numerous times. And Bitcoin was the first iteration of money that no one can control that actually worked. Peer-to-peer electronic cash. That is the first line of the Bitcoin white paper. And what that means, it means this is money that is transacted between any two individuals without the involvement of any third party. So you don't need anybody's permission, not the government, not the banks, not your boss, no one's permission to transact from one person to another, irrespective of the amount that you're transacting with, whether it's a dollar or a billion. You want to send it to someone, 30 seconds, it's done. It's also the only form of sound money that no one can corrupt, manipulate, control, or regulate. That is in code. It is completely decentralized. Now, in all fairness, if governments were paying attention to Bitcoin in the same way they are today, 16 years ago when it was first created, they could have likely killed it. But they dismissed it as funny money, as internet dorky, waste of time, and all that stuff. Thankfully, because over time, there was enough people that believed in it, and it grew, its decentralization grew to a point where when they finally clicked that this is not funny money, they tried to attack it numerous times over the last 15 years. And all of these governments, with all of their massive unlimited resources, they all failed spectacularly, all of them, one by one. And that was 15 years ago. Today, Bitcoin's decentralization and strength is light years more powerful than it was back then. So there's no chance in hell that anyone is able to disrupt it. The only thing you can do with Bitcoin, no matter who you are, is use it, sending and receive. And it also doesn't matter how much any one entity owns of Bitcoin. They cannot control it, make decisions for it, manipulate it, or what have you. That is all, these are all these myths that people that haven't studied Bitcoin that automatically assume and keeps them away from adopting the only sound money that they can actually own. See, Bitcoin for the first time in history is money that is actually yours 100%. All you have to do is at the minimum level is memorize 12 words. Anyone can do this. As long as these 12 words are in your head, you can take your money anywhere around the globe and use it. No one can take it away from you. You don't put it in a bank. You don't put it anywhere. You hold it yourself in self-custody. Now, that's a whole different conversation. But Bitcoin, for the first time, is something that we can own in self-custody. You don't want to leave it with a third party repeating the same mistakes as we did with that funny money, the worthless fiat money of leaving it in a bank or thinking you need an institution to help you protect it and what have you. All this garbage are, bad habits from the legacy system that must be broken and forgotten in order to move forward properly into sound money, right? And so,
Yes, I look, everything you're saying is resonating so deeply with me. I interviewed Lawrence Lepard a week ago, and about his new book, The Big Print, and he tells a story in there of I think it was a woman from the Middle East who escaped a violent marriage and the country. And the only reason she was able to do it was because she was a computer programmer and she got paid in Bitcoin. And she had the seed phrase in her head. She managed to escape the country and save $250,000 of Bitcoin without her husband or the state or anybody being able to get their hands on her wealth, her sovereignty, her freedom. And so it empowered her out of a bad relationship and an oppressive government regime, which is just so powerful. I was just at the Bank of Cyprus on Monday opening a bank account, and I was there for an hour going through an interview, and I was told that I had to, before I deposited money, let alone withdrew money, anything over 10,000 euros, I had to email them in advance and tell them the money was coming into what I used to think was my bank account, you know. But I not only have to tell them when I'm taking money out of a reasonable amount, but also when I'm putting money in. And people ask, what's the problem with that? Why do we? And when I walked out, I said to my wife, can you see why I'm such a Bitcoin nut? Right? Like, I could literally, I don't need any of that intermediary anymore because I have sovereignty. And sovereignty to me, Tony, is just so sacred and spiritual and important. And it's why I became an entrepreneur, you know, 30 years ago. And you speak about it, and hearing your story adds so much color and humanity to this. Can you maybe just explain, I know for you and I it's simple, but just I'll sort of double click on the phrase sound money and the difference between Bitcoin and all the other cryptos that people hear out there, which essentially are very similar to the fiat system. You know, they are centralized. Maybe you can explain what centralized means, how they are similar in the term that they could just print more of the asset, and why Bitcoin is so special.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the main difference, just to put it in the simplest terms, in the simplest way I can think of, no one controls Bitcoin. There's no manager, there's no CEO, there's no company, there's no government, there's nobody behind Bitcoin. Bitcoin is powered by energy, you know, like the proof of work. This entity, Satoshi Nakamoto, obviously there was someone or a group of people who created Bitcoin at some point. But that individual disappeared. I personally think they passed away. Okay, I don't think they exist anymore.
I agree.
But that individual in 2008 must have been screwed in some way similar to what I went through and said enough is enough. And they had the knowledge and skill in order to pull this off. So how they did it is nothing short of miraculous. And how they disappeared without a trace is also short of miraculous. So if you believe in prophecies and all that stuff, I didn't before I, you know, discovered Bitcoin. I changed my mind. You know, like every once in a while, something happens in the universe that makes you question everything you thought you believed previously. For me, this was it. If there was no Bitcoin, I'm not sure I'd be here today talking to you, because what hope would I have had after everything that collapsed, right? You need to hold on to something.
And that's something powerful
enough and real enough to help you get back on your feet. It can't be fluff, right?
If a man can't go to work and trust that his time and energy is going to be there for him and his family after doing the work, what is the purpose? What is the point? And when you've been rug pulled by the financial system to that degree, it's happening everywhere. But it's just, in your case, it happened all the way to its final conclusion overnight. But it's happening slowly in all countries around the world. But
what,
you know,
happened in Lebanon?
Hope is so key.
What happened to me in Lebanon, in my opinion, is coming everywhere. I just don't see how it can't not come everywhere. It's already starting to happen. You know, in a big way in Australia, people are being restricted from their money. Another bad case scenario that's, you know, going viral now on social media is in the UK, which is a completely disastrously failed country. That's happening there. It's just going to spread. The EU now is collapsing. I don't think there's to be any EU in under 5 years. I think it all falls apart or becomes so irrelevant that nobody cares. It's very evident now. They're desperately trying to release their central bank digital currencies, blah, blah, and all. Why? It's because more people are exiting the system. And once that happens, these parasites, become insignificant, irrelevant. Nobody cares about them anymore, right? So thinking that these blowups are isolated to certain geographic areas is extremely dangerous and naive. Just for, in all fairness, the banking system in Lebanon 30 years ago was hailed as the model to copy worldwide. It was the five-star gold standard of banking. And all of this glory resulted in the theft of every citizen's bank account. So if you think you're living somewhere that's immune to this, I have bad news for you. So whether you believe me or not, that's up to you.
It's happening. It's happening. Like I have followers in Australia telling me that if they bank with Macquarie, they've put a blanket ban on transferring to crypto exchanges in Australia. My wife recently came into a little bit of money, $25,000, and said, what should I do with it? I said, why don't you buy some Bitcoin? And she's like, okay, I'm going to buy some Bitcoin. So she was on the phone. I was there next to her, and she put it on speaker. We were there for 25 minutes with ANZ Bank, and they were like trying to talk her out of transferring money from ANZ. They wouldn't let her transfer her own money to CoinSpot in Australia without a 25-minute interview where they basically dressed her down, like basically asked her literally, are you under duress right now? Is there somebody there with you? And then they asked to be taken off speakerphone. I was just like, oh my God, like, is this actually real in Australia? And it was like, I bank with National Australia Bank, I have no problem, but with ANZ and Macquarie, apparently there's real problems. So this is, and when you stop and think, guys, listeners, stop and think about what's actually happening here. You went out into the world, you expended the one true thing you can never replace, which is your time away from your family, you know, to earn this money, which they have then inserted themselves in your life and your decision as to where you want to move that money and can stop it. And that to me is just profoundly wrong. And what Tony talked about with inflation, guys, what this means is that if you work your whole life and they're inflating the value of the currency away, it's theft for one, but it means that you can no longer just save your money. You actually have to invest. You have to go up the risk curve, put your money at risk just to keep up with what you were told. The goalposts are just being moved and moved and moved and moved, and you just become a slave till you die. It's just so sad and terrible.
And those investments that you think you're making are in a rigged system that is not in your favor. So that's why most people end up losing money with these investments, you know, thinking they're going to keep up, you know, with inflation. They don't. They end up making things worse. The problem is that folks don't realize that they're working for free, right? Mm. Like if that really resonates properly in the brains of 8 billion people, you'd have a civil war overnight. You're going to work for money that isn't money. You're paying taxes on it, and they're stealing it away from you on top of that by deflating its purchasing power, by printing money so that they can live for free and you can be a slave to the system, thinking you have to work harder and harder just to keep up. That is what is happening. And so for the first time ever, there is an option to leave that system. You can't fix it from within the system. So anyone trying to find a solution from within that same system, I'll invest in real estate or gold or a stock, that is a waste of time, because it's all in that same manipulated, corrupt system. You have to exit out completely, like into a completely other galaxy. And that other galaxy is Bitcoin. For the first time ever, we have something like this. Forget the fact that this is too good to be true. It is too good to be true, but it is true. And it's been 16 years that it's proven itself that it is the only exit that can actually save you from that theft that is ongoing and is going to continue getting worse as time goes on.
So Tony, tell us about what that looks like. You, I assume, have exited this system. You're a businessman. You run a business. How does that work in your life practically? So how do you get paid? How do you live your life? How do you pay your bills now as a sovereign free person?
After many months, we put together the Bitcoin way in order to bring all of this knowledge to as many people as possible. The revolution here is Bitcoin in self-custody, people owning, you know, their money for the first time ever. But since it comes from the tech world, very few people are comfortable doing this. They fear it. They're going to make a mistake. They're going to lose their money and what have you, which are all extremely valid concerns. But this is not nuclear physics, right? Anybody can do self-custody. All you need is a good teacher. So we put together this team in order to onboard as many folks as possible who want to help themselves understand Bitcoin and how they can improve their own quality of life and break free from that cancerous system that is draining their lives to nothing, to teach them how to do it. All our work is Bitcoin only. We are 100% Bitcoin. We have zero connections to the fiat world anymore. Nothing, zero. Almost everything we do and pay for is in Bitcoin right now. So depending on where you live, yes, in 2025, you still maybe have to jump through a few hoops to get from point A to point B. But over time, like since 2019, 2020, the number of hoops that I have had to jump through have decreased significantly. And they're going to continue to decrease where they become as seamless as pressing a button like you're doing now with that fiat currency. But we're not at that stage yet, but it's coming. And those hoops are not hard. They're like 10, 20 second hoops. No, nothing crazy.
Nothing too hard. So if I was to, like, obviously you're a business. So if I sign up for Bitcoin Way services, like I want to learn self-custody, I'll become a client, there's a fee that I'm imagining you quote in Satoshis, mm-hmm. or do you quote it in dollars? Or then how do I pay you? And then if you and I were to go out and have lunch afterwards and you were paying the bill, how would you pay the bill?
That's a very good question. All our services are paid in Bitcoin. So, of course, we show you like the fiat equivalent of it because most people still calculate that way. But when you decide to proceed, we send you an invoice. That invoice is 100% in Bitcoin, and we help you pay it if you've never made a Bitcoin payment before, which takes about 2 minutes if you've got Bitcoin somewhere. If you don't have Bitcoin initially, depending on where you live, we direct you to the right place where you can get it safely and securely. And in some instances, we even help you with that entire process, just so that you don't have to go through the hurdles of, you know, discovering it yourself if you're not comfortable. So once that payment is made, our services begin. You know, we hop on a call, video call, and we get to work. Our services are one-time fees. Unlike many other people, we don't charge memberships or recurring fees. We don't have any percentage-based fees, which are essentially a wealth tax in Bitcoin, just in case some people weren't aware of that. They're all one-time fees. We get to work and all of that stuff. When we go out to lunch, okay, there's a lot more on-ramps now around the world that will give you debit cards, which are powered by your Bitcoin. Okay, so if you can't pay Bitcoin to Bitcoin natively, which I strongly recommend people do as much as possible, the whole spending and replacing, there are on-ramps globally, and a lot more coming out, you know, every week, that'll give you a debit card powered by your Bitcoin. So you would send Bitcoin to that debit card. It's essentially a Visa and a MasterCard.
Like Stripe and, or something.
Yeah, something like that. And wherever you go that doesn't accept Bitcoin directly, you just tap like you do right normally with your card now. In the background, what that card does is that it'll sell the amount of Bitcoin required in real time to pay for the thing that you're buying and process the transaction. The merchant has no idea this is going on. Only you know that this is powered by your Bitcoin.
What cards? I'm just curious, because while I travel now, like you in Europe, I use Wise. So it's quite similar, right? So I fund my Wise card from fiat currency with National Australia Bank. And then I go in everywhere here, I pay for everything on this card. So it's the same thing. So I transfer my Bitcoin. What sort of company would it be? Stripe?
There's many of them. Like, for example, a common popular name is, for example, Revolut.
Revolut. Okay.
So Revolut, you can buy your Bitcoin, leave it there, and you know they have a card, obviously, that you can use to tap, you buy whatever you want, And you sell your Bitcoin in the background. Revolut is just one example. Like, I don't know them all off the top of my head, but we have a comprehensive list that we regularly keep up to date, and we send out folks that are interested in this. You sign up, you have to do KYC with them. So that's unfortunately unavoidable, because anything that's still linked to the fiat rail still has to do this nonsense. So, but it's not an aggressive one. It's like usually done in like 3-4 minutes. They process you, accept you, life's good. And then you never have to look at it again. And once you get used to that, you have two ways of living. Either Bitcoin to Bitcoin, which is recommendation one. And then if that's not available, you fall back to that debit card, which is loaded and funded by your Bitcoin to pay for whatever it is that you're interested in. Ironically, a lot of people end up understanding that life on a Bitcoin standard actually becomes cheaper once you start using these cards. And like a funny example that I use that somehow seems to work is, let's say you put 1,000 euros, since you're in Europe, on one of these cards, and you leave 1,000 euros in your bank account, and you go out and buy, I don't know, shoes. So those shoes, let's say they cost 200 euros. So you spend it from your bank account, drops down to 800. And you do the same thing with that debit card, also drops down to 800 euros. The difference is, when Bitcoin pumps, well, when you look at your available purchasing power on that debit card, now that's back up to 1,000, maybe more. So what just happened? Essentially, you got your shoes for free, right? And you have more purchasing power to buy even more stuff. That's what happens when you live on a Bitcoin standard, which is money that is deflationary. It goes the opposite direction of your fiat money, which is inflationary, created to steal, whereas deflationary is created to give you back your purchasing power. That is fundamentally the difference between the two. And so if your life sucks financially, or you're struggling like I did, or you hate your bank because of all the nightmare scenarios they put you through, well, then defund them. And the way you do this is by opting out of their system. Now there is an option, a real viable, solid, bulletproof option: Bitcoin and self-custody. It's not like maybe it'll work. No, it will work. The volatility that you see, ignore it. That's a temporary thing, because the world is transitioning from a broken system into sound money. Of course you're going to have volatility, okay? But when you zoom out, whoever started in Bitcoin early on, 2009, their lives have been exponentially
cheaper,
upgraded, you know? And to think you're late to Bitcoin because it's worth, I don't know, 87,000, 88,000 is lunacy. Everything that Bitcoin went through 15 years ago is like a drop in the bucket compared to where it's headed. Now that you have 8 billion people paying attention to it, you've got governments FOMOing into it, you've got institutions killing each other to accumulate as much of it as possible. You have banks now all of a sudden that want to custody it, right? If they can't beat you, eventually they join you because they can't get rid of you. Peer-to-peer technology. You cannot stop this. The genie's out of the bottle. Peer-to-peer technology is like the wind blowing. Who's going to stop the wind from blowing? You can't. Anyone who suggests this is fucking crazy, right? Same thing for peer-to-peer. They tried to kill peer-to-peer music sharing and file sharing and all that. How well did that play out? And that's for useless stuff, music and movies and files. You think they're going to be able to stop peer-to-peer money?
Yeah. Yeah, and this is the thing that the penny dropped for me, is this is a global asset. So it's not just Australian currency, or it's not just Lebanese pounds or British pounds. It is a global currency. The entire world can buy it 24/7. And as more and more people go off zero, which I think is increasingly becoming the case, where people realize the only wrong allocation is zero into this asset class, not financial advice, but people are starting to wake up and realize, when you see the president of the United States building a Bitcoin reserve, and you start to see banks, what that means for those who missed what Tony said about banks custodying it, it means that when you log into your National Australia Bank or your Bank of Cyprus, wherever you bank, you see your savings account, your checking account, your credit card balance, and your Bitcoin balance. which you'll be able to deposit and transact in Bitcoin inside of banks, is what he's talking about. These signs are significant signals in the marketplace to be paying attention to. Very, very interesting. People have, I think, a few, you know, I think that the key thing I wanted to just highlight on what you just said there, Tony, is that the challenge for many working families is that their time preference for money is extremely high because they are stuck in this system where most people are living week to week. And so the idea, the magic trick that the banks pull on us is we can't see the devaluation of our currency in real time as a number. Whereas when you move to the Bitcoin standard, you can open up CoinStats any time of day and see your net worth going up and down, up and down, up and down. And this is what scares the crap out of people, that, you know, Bitcoin could drop 10% in a week and it's like getting a 10% pay cut that week. So to sort of escape the system, you need to learn to lower your time preference and zoom out and understand over time, Bitcoin grows at the moment, the last 5 years, I think it's about 50% annually. It's becoming more valuable, compounding, which means that things are getting 50% cheaper in your life if you hold that asset. But the trade-off is that you need to be able to stop looking at coin stats. I'm trying to keep this really practical for people and just understand what you own, right? And that comes down to education and patience and a whole bunch of other things. Because I can tell you, after I've been in this space for 6 years now, and I still have big aha moments listening to someone like you or listening to Preston Pierce or these leaders and listening to people's ideas and talking. And I still go, oh, my God, I'm only just realizing this now, 6 years later, and I spend 2 hours, 3 hours a day studying Bitcoin. It's crazy. So,
the biggest disadvantage that people have, unfortunately, is still being too comfortable, where things are just working. I used to believe that, you know, with, you know, sort of like aggressive education and all that, you know, you may reach a lot of folks. And to a certain extent, it is working. But there's just too many people that are so still entrenched in the old world because that's where they're comfortable. And so they refuse to listen or even acknowledge the possibility that the world is changing. So in my opinion, sadly, I think most people are going to learn what I learned the way I learned it, is when everything falls apart. So I hope that doesn't happen, at least not on a mass scale. But, you know, from my lens, more and more, I just don't see how it won't. And it's a very painful thing for me to say, because I don't wish what I went through on my worst enemy. When you know, eating rice cakes and bananas and pasta for like months and months on end, because that's all you have at your disposal, that is not a fun life. Okay, so most people are not yet in this predicament, and you still have the option to sort of like protect yourself. Like you know the fire is coming your way, so buy the insurance to save you when it actually hits. Don't wait until you're up in flames to look for that insurance. Then it's too late, right? So that's like a strong message that I try to push out, is that this is not a joke. This is not a fairy tale. This is not some crazy people, you know, and it's not a cult pushing out, you know, all this preaching all day long. This is a warning message based on real life experience that is not isolated to any specific person or any specific region.
So how do you live today, Tony? Like I've read your website and I love the mission page and all that, but how do you live as a sovereign individual? Like, are you, like, how have you set your life up today to just own your life? How do you travel? You seem to be all the time traveling. Like, yeah. What does your life look like?
I'm what you can call like a sovereign individual. And, you know, I strive every day to maintain that lifestyle. And this is, you know, what we help folks attain. So my life is on a Bitcoin standard. Whenever I can pay for services in Bitcoin, I do it, because I want to support every single business that is adopting Bitcoin, something we strongly and heavily encourage everyone to do. In the instances where you can't pay with Bitcoin, the debit cards that I mentioned earlier work just fine. So they pay for whatever fiat item including plane tickets and what have you. So that works fine. The other thing is seeking residency in jurisdictions that are not diabolical. And believe me, there are a lot of them. So not every country wants to enslave their citizens and abuse them to no end. So there are options. We also offer that service at the Bitcoin Way, part of our Plan B. We help you find a location that are Bitcoin friendly, freedom friendly, respect you as a, and value as human beings. I was looking for all of these things for
Same,
myself initially,
same. That's why I'm here. Maybe you could talk to us, like, what is the difference for, like, what are some of the jurisdictions that you like and why, and how do they sort of compare to, like, on important things, what, how do they compare to the West?
I stay away from the West, the EU, all of these places. For me, they're no-go zones. These are failed economies, and until they fail, for in finality, I wouldn't touch them.
So where are you?
Because sadly, they're in some of the most beautiful places in the world. But when you're infected by a cancer like this, you have to look out for yourself. We're focused right now on Central and South America. I believe this is where the new Monaco of the new world are going to be formed. These are, traditionally considered third world countries that have now, a lot of them have embraced Bitcoin. They're very aggressively, adopting it, incentivizing folks, with Bitcoin to come here. Their tax programs are extremely attractive. In some cases, there are no taxes. They don't tax you on your Bitcoins, so you can live here on a Bitcoin standard without any headaches. And so this is what we look for,
And
that's
how long
what
do
we're
you
looking
have to be there in these some of these countries
for. Well,
to be?
depends on the area. Some of these countries, you don't have to be there at all. You just have to come here to update your legal paperwork, receive your updated residency cards, and you can continue traveling wherever you want, as long as you can afford it, obviously. But in terms of the jurisdictional requirements, minimal. Again, when a country wants to open its doors and welcome people, they're not going to make your life hell. In fact, they're going to let you pretty much live on your own terms. As long as you don't bother anyone or break any legitimate rules, nobody cares. You live your life, you raise your family, you do whatever you want as a decent human being, and life is good. So you own your money. You live in a jurisdiction that respects you as a human being, and you don't have to worry about anything else.
It
But
doesn't
it's not an
tax you to
easy,
death.
it's not an easy step to do for a lot of people to just pack up and leave. And I get it. I was forced into this situation. So in hindsight, you can look at it, okay, well, he had no choice. But everybody has a choice. If you're tired of your life and you just are sick of the rat race, you are going to at some point have to cut the cord and make that hard decision, because the right decisions are often the toughest ones to make, but they are the right ones. I often get the argument, but I have friends and family here and all that. I'm like, okay, great. But if you go down with the ship with them, since you decide to stay, like, how helpful are you to them? I had to make that call as well. Because I also had that backlash. Oh, you're leaving us, blah, blah. You're so selfish. I'm selfish. Had I stayed and gotten completely wrecked repeatedly over and over, what use am I to these people? So you fast forward 5, 6 years later. Oh my God, thank you, Samu. Thank God we have you. God bless you, blah, blah, blah. Right?
Right. And you meet new people, Tony. Like I'm out here in Cyprus and you're just up the road now, and I'm doing this pod and I'm meeting new people in this community all the time. And I'm really loving it because they're really smart, global freedom lovers, which is my people. And there's so many events and opportunities to grow your network. And people just go stale and get suffocated and strangulated till they die in the West, in my opinion. I love that. And something you just said, it just was one of those moments where the penny dropped for me again, is that when you're assessing countries, one of the things people assess naturally is how stable is the banking system. But when you become on the Bitcoin standard, you have your own banking system. You don't need, so then it just becomes around how close is it to a good hospital if I need one, and how safe is it? And that's a whole different thing, because one of the biggest things is how safe is my money when I earn it, you know? So I love this. And you're the second person I've met now who actually invoices in Satoshis. And I'd love to have a longer conversation with you offline. I'm definitely going to book a time personally with you, because I'd love to chat and compare notes, and I'll pay for some time with you and however that works. But guys, if this is resonating with you and you want help with your sovereignty and you want help with being onboarded safely to the Bitcoin network, look Tony up, because as you can see here, this is a human being that has lived this experience and is deeply passionate about onboarding people into this ultimate sort of, you know, start small and then, you know, go as far as you want to go. But I personally, you know, I've been traveling across borders recently and relocated over here for now, and just knowing that I've got this chunk of, you know, financial power that's within my control, truly within my control, that I'm not reliant on a bank. I don't need permission from anybody. I could pay anybody with it. It's very, very liberating. And so if you're an entrepreneur, I would guess that liberation and freedom and autonomy and agency over your own time and money is very important. So it is a journey that takes time. You said at the start, Tony, that you have to let the ego die. Isn't it true that Bitcoin really humbles you over time? You know,
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, like I'm no longer the same person that I used to be. You know, being successful in the fiat world, that version of me is dead. I no longer care about material things. I don't own anything. You know, like you know, they used to make fun of the whole World Economic Forum that they want you to own nothing and be happy. Well, that's exactly what it is right now. I own nothing and I'm extremely happy, because the only thing I own is the one thing I need. And with that, I own everything, right? So when you own your time and energy, you are unconfiscatable. You live life on your own terms. You don't need to listen to anyone. Nobody owns you. Nobody makes your rules. You decide all of these by yourself. You don't like someplace, get on a plane and leave. You can do it. You own your wealth. It's in your hands. You're not leaving it in a bank. You're not leaving it with an institution. You're leaving it with yourself, the way it's intended to be. You know, first line of the Bitcoin white paper: peer-to-peer electronic cash, personal responsibility. For the first time ever, we have this thing now, right? So, Bitcoin, just to recap, Bitcoin is three things the world has never seen. Three things in one. It's a store of value, it's a medium of exchange, and it's a unit of account. So it's a store of value, meaning like if you're holding your Bitcoin, its value, its purchasing power is going to go up forever. Why? Because the fiat currency is going to go down to zero forever. That's the direct, it's by design, it's a Ponzi, right?
That's not a, this is not a theory, guys. Just go to ChatGPT and say, show me the purchasing power of the Australian dollar, the US dollar, any fiat currency over the last 100 years. It's not an opinion. This is absolute fact.
So it's a store of value. So if you're holding your savings in Bitcoin, your purchasing power over time will mathematically go up. There's no way around it. Okay. Despite the volatility, including the volatility, zoom out a little bit, and over time, your purchasing power is much higher. So it's a medium of exchange, it's money, right? Be careful of the narratives being pushed out there that want to sort of like sandbox Bitcoin as a store of value only. Because if that happens, Bitcoin fails. But thankfully, it's not happening. Governments and central banks are petrified of 8 billion people figuring out that Bitcoin is money. Because when that happens, the fiat system dies 30 seconds later. I can pay you for anything at all right now in 10 seconds, Bitcoin to Bitcoin, without ever touching any fiat currency. It's money, right? And so over time, on a Bitcoin standard, the price of everything drops down to its utility value. That's how life gets cheaper, Right now, homes are going up in value, for example. That's the easiest example. Why are they going up in value? Is the house worth $5 million? Of course not. But the money that you use to buy that house is worth exponentially less. That's how you have to pay for it more. So if you were to reprice this house in Bitcoin 5 years ago, okay, let's say the house cost 300 Bitcoin 5 years ago. Today, it'll cost you five for the same house. So on again, on a Bitcoin standard, life gets cheaper. On the fiat standard, holy shit, it's $5 million. There's no way I can afford it. See the difference? So Bitcoin is money. You want to go to the supermarket and buy for a bag of bananas? If they accept Bitcoin, pay them in Bitcoin. You want to replace that Bitcoin? For the moment, use that garbage fiat money, exchange it, spend and replace your Bitcoin when you spend it. But when you spend Bitcoin, what that's doing is that it's accelerating global adoption of Bitcoin as money. And that's exactly what the world needs. So when businesses have clients that pay them in Bitcoin, they're going to be more incentivized to, push out these products and services priced in Bitcoin, which again, over time, will cost you less. That is a message that we push out and try to educate folks every single day. You have to own your money. When the banks and institutions come into Bitcoin, which they are, they're going to start offering all sorts of services which require you to custody your Bitcoin with them. Don't do it. Hold your money yourself, because once your Bitcoin is with them, it's no longer your Bitcoin. It's no different than your money in a bank. As many people are painfully discovering now, that money is no longer yours. You have to ask permission from some piece of shit who's going to give you a hard time to use your own money. So if you don't want to live that nightmare, don't put yourself in that position to begin with. Bitcoin and self-custody, we teach that. It's not hard. Anyone can do it. Even if you have no tech background, anyone can do it. So,
I love it, Tony. I absolutely love it. This is, I mean, it resonates so hard with me, and it's taken so long. Guys, I know for many of you listening to this, this is kind of like you're going to feel this and go, holy shit, I really like the sound of what Tony just said. I love this idea of freedom and sovereignty. I don't quite understand it. You've got a journey ahead of you, and it starts with education and then action, going and buying your first little bit of Bitcoin. You don't have to buy a whole Bitcoin. You can spend $100. Just what I love about Tony's system is if you want to pay him, you have to pay him a Bitcoin. So you have to learn how to buy it. And that's step number one, learn how to buy it and then learn how to send it. And all of a sudden you're like, holy shit, Tony's going to give me services in exchange for this Bitcoin, which is such a that first powerful transaction of an exchange of value between Tony and his team and you, done in this alternative currency, is going to be a powerful experience in and of itself. So if you want to connect with Tony, guys, please get over to thebitcoinway.com, thebitcoinway.com. You'll be able to connect with one of Tony's team for a consultation. He'll take you through the services that they offer. I'm going to be doing it myself because I want them to have a look at what I'm doing and how I'm doing it. But I also want to have a chat with you, Tony, about sovereignty, and location. Personally, that's something I'm super interested in. Yeah, so go over there, guys. Check it out. Tony, thank you so much. Is there anything else you wanted to end with or information you wanted to share to the audience before we finish this one up?
Everyone's welcome to get in touch with me. I mean, at the Bitcoin Way, we offer everyone, the initial 30-minute consultation is free. It costs you nothing. It's just a connect, say hi, see what you're looking for, see what we can help you. And again, this whole journey doesn't have to all be done at once. We break it down into bite-sized pieces in order to move at your own pace. We've got plenty of services to take you from, the point you are now to becoming fully sovereign. Anyone can do it. So your Bitcoin and self-custody, again, as you mentioned earlier, you do not need to buy a whole Bitcoin to be in Bitcoin. You have not missed the boat. We are still prehistoric dinosaur early. And how I know this is because if you step out into the real world and just ask anyone about Bitcoin, they'll look at you like you landed from Jupiter,
Yeah.
right? So we're still very early, despite the 88,000 price tag. That is like a drop in the bucket compared to where this thing is going in fiat terms. Okay. So Bitcoin self-custody, cybersecurity services, helping you, de-Google your phone as well, helping you find Plan B residency programs in areas, that are Bitcoin friendly, freedom friendly, that respect you as a human being. All of these things, we'll walk you through it. We'll meet you in person in some of them. You're in very good hands. And so step number one has to be a decision that every individual decides to take. Yes, I'm ready for that change. I think it's time. That is needed. Without that, that personal decision, nothing really will change. You have to decide that you want to upgrade your life and disconnect from something horrible to something where the grass is definitely greener.
Yeah. Tony, it was an absolute pleasure, mate. Thank you for making the time for us
Thank you for
today.
having me, man. It was a
And
wonderful conversation.
yeah, are you going to be at Bitcoin Las Vegas? Will you be over there for that?
I'm not sure yet. I'm still looking, leafing through all the events to see which ones make sense and which ones. Unfortunately, we still have 24 hours in a day, so I have to divide that properly.
We'll see how we go. I'll be at that one. I might be at Bitcoin Prague as well. So if you're going to be around, make sure you hit
Sure.
me up. Thank you so much, guys. Go and check them out. Tony at the Bitcoin Way. Thank you so much for joining us. Bye for now.
Thank you, Adam.
Hey there. I hope you enjoyed that episode of Unemployable. If you'd like to watch another episode, just click there.